sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series!
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast.
But we didn't come here to drink beer! We came here to win this ballgame!
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I said to the Uber boy, I said, take me out with the crowd!
What's going on, Cubs fans? I am Sean Sears, and you're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Cubs lose Game 1 of the Wild Card Series as the Marlins score 5 runs in the 7th to take a 5-1 win from Kyle Hendricks and the Cubs Wednesday afternoon. We'll recap the Game 1 loss here in the first segment and then preview Thursday's Game 2 matchup featuring Yu Darvish and Sixto Sanchez on the mound. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and get yourself $10 off your first order. That's BuiltBar.com. And then today's show is also brought to you in partnership with CubsInsider.com. Head to CubsInsider to read about how the MLB is planning on selling 11,500 tickets to the NLCS and World Series games in Arlington. Read about that and more at CubsInsider.com, official partner of Locked On Cubs. You can get Locked On Cubs at whatever podcast app you use, whether that's Google, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn app, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Leave a 5-star review of our show. Then make sure you're following us on Twitter at Locked On Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. So Game 1 didn't quite go the way the Cubs were expecting. They lose 5-1 to the Marlins. A pretty good showing from this Cubs team, honestly, despite that 7th inning. Ian Happ hit a solo shot in the top of the 5th. Kyle Hendricks was working himself out of some jams, some really tough moments. He had to deal with a leadoff double in the top of the 4th, I believe, from Jesus Aguilar. Got the bases on, or I think there was an error from Javier Baez and a runner on before that. So runners on 1st and 2nd with no outs. He was able to get a double play and work himself out of that jam there, too. Looking strong despite not having his best stuff. He did walk 3 batters today. The line for Hendricks today, 6 and a third innings of work, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts, and a home run allowed to Corey Dickerson. He looked okay, but this was the first time Kyle Hendricks walked more than 2 batters in over a year in a start, which is very uncharacteristic of him. He just didn't quite have the absolute best stuff. And you could see his two-seam and changeup were kind of going in different spots. Wilson Contreras was putting the glove down, and you could see Hendricks wasn't quite hitting it. That curveball just wasn't breaking the way it typically does. But Hendricks was able to gut through some of this, and still, even when Hendricks isn't quite on, he's always locating the bottom portion of the strike zone. So even when he's missing, a lot of times it's on the outside edge, or it's not very much hard of the plate. But coming into the top of the 7th, Hendricks was getting close to 100 pitches, had walked 3 guys, and was kind of showing signs of probably time to pull him, especially with the top of the lineup coming up later on. He gives up 2 hard singles in a row with the top of the order for the Marlins coming up here with Corey Dickerson leading off. And Rossi decides to stick with him, even though Jeremy Jeffress was warming up in the bullpen. Another questionable decision there, though, from Ross as well. But he sticks with Hendricks. He unfortunately, first pitch he throws to Corey Dickerson, leaves the yard, goes flying out of left field. It hits so hard out of the park that it bounced back into the park. Absolutely nailed it. Kyle Hendricks said after the game that he didn't think it was a bad pitch. He tried to go with a first pitch fastball, and Dickerson was just all over it. He does have a .320 batting average at Wrigley Field. He is kind of a quiet Cub killer a little bit after his days with the Pirates. He crushes that ball. They pull Kyle Hendricks out. Jeremy Jeffress comes in. He's not much more effective either. He does get the final 2 outs of that inning, but he does give up 3 hits, 2 earned runs. Got 2 strikeouts, but he gives up a 2-run shot to Jesus Aguilar, who crushed a ball into right field. Just kind of one of those moments where the wind just kind of got sucked out of the Cubs' sails a little bit. And you could see it shortly after the bottom of the 7th. The Cubs go 1-2-3. They only get 2 batters or 2 runners on base after that 5-inning 7th from Marlins. So the Cubs just couldn't put anything together. They get Alcantara out, but they struggle a little bit against this Marlins bullpen that's much improved, but still one of the worst bullpens in the National League. It does, and according to WAR, they do have the worst bullpen in the playoffs right now for the National League. It's an improved group, though. The Cubs just didn't look very impressive at the plate today, and that's a concern. You look back through the lineup here, Ian Happ, obviously he hits the home run. He had two hits on the day in the RBI, and the lone run scored. He drove himself in. But Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, and Javier Baez go 1-for-12 with four strikeouts. Chris Bryant striking out twice. Kyle Schwarber walked a little bit, and that was encouraging. He had some good plate appearances. Obviously, Wilson Contreras hits a double off of Brandon Kinsler, the bottom of the ninth. It doesn't really mean much, though, unfortunately. The Cubs struck out seven times. It's not terrible, I guess, but it's not a good sign either. Alcantara does have the ability to strike guys out, but it just felt like the Cubs weren't very competitive in a lot of these at-bats. And that's frustrating. That has to change, especially when Kyle Hendricks is giving you such a great outing despite the rough seventh inning. But going back on this decision for Ross for a second, initially I was kind of frustrated with it. I think like a lot of people were. It was kind of clear Hendricks should probably come out of this game. And before the sixth inning, he'd gotten up to about, close to 100 pitches. His location hadn't been great all game. And then he gives up those two singles. It felt like he should have been pulled there. But I guess Ross decided that he was coming out after that batter regardless, being Dickerson. But I guess he initially was worried about wanting to put in a lefty to face Dickerson and then have Marte behind him and a bunch of strong righties shortly after with the three-batter minimum rule. He didn't want to stick a lefty and waste him on just, essentially, just Dickerson. Didn't really get that. He was warming up Jeremy Jeffers anyway, so that was kind of weird. But ultimately, Ross was saying that he wanted to stick with his guy, being that Kyle Hendricks has got them there at this point. Hendricks talked a little bit about how he's really felt Rossi kind of giving him some confidence throughout the season, really, putting faith in Hendricks, especially after that great opening day start, going that complete game shutout against the Brewers to open up this season. It felt like it was time to pull him, but Ross stuck with him and said, Kyle has gotten us here. I'm going to ride with my guys, our guys that have gotten us to this point. He stuck with Hendricks and it kind of hurt him a little bit. But I think if that's Ross's approach to things, I can appreciate that and hope it builds confidence. But at the same time, too, you would have to think in an elimination game here coming up Thursday that there's going to be a much shorter lease for some of these pitchers. Granted, it's Yu Darvish, and he's been nothing short of incredible this year and even short last year too as well. But I think you have to really, if Darvish doesn't have it for whatever reason, you have to be ready to move into the next step here because this is an elimination game. It's hard to grade Ross too hardly on some of these decisions. I think Jeremy Jeffers bringing him in after Hendricks was kind of a weird choice. He hadn't pitched that great and really wasn't striking out guys a lot. We talked about a little bit with Ryan, this bullpen itself, that Jeffers, a guy where the results look a lot better than what you actually see. So I thought that was strange that Ross would go to Jeffers there in such a high leverage moment. I don't know. It's hard to, like I was saying, though, it's hard to grade Ross on a lot of this because he is a rookie manager. This is his first time being in the postseason, and it's coming 60 games into the job. He was probably expecting 100 more games to get acclimated to this before he was managing postseason games. So, you can't really get on him too much, and honestly, in the moment, I was frustrated with the mistake of leaving Hendricks in here, but looking back now and hearing what he had to say and what Kyle Hendricks had to say too, they were both confident in what they're doing. And Kyle Hendricks has consistently gone at least to the eighth inning, if not longer, in his last four starts and has done it. I think he is third in the league in innings pitched. He's been doing this all year. And you don't necessarily think, oh, just because it's the postseason that he wouldn't be able to do that. Now, I think there was other factors you should be looking at. The two singles having exit velocities over 100 miles an hour before that Corey Dickerson home run should have probably told you it's time to go. I don't know. Like I said, you can't really bust Ross on this really too much. At the same time, too, though, it really did seem like it was time to pull Hendricks. So I'm sure we'll see a quicker leash for Ross and his pitchers in this elimination game. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning, and why wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brands his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers and access to AutoRock.com at home in your pocket. AutoRock.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to AutoRock.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake pads to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in an easy few clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for the professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to AutoRock.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Right, Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so you know who sent you. It's us. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, here in the second segment, we're previewing Thursday's matchup between Yu Darvish and Sixto Sanchez. Thursday's game is another 1 p.m. start, 1:08, I think, is the actual start time. Game two is also on ABC for this, so if you didn't catch the first game or were listening to it on the radio and get able to watch TV, it is going to be at ABC, which is a little strange. It's ESPN broadcast, but it's ABC. This matchup, though, Yu Darvish, obviously, been incredible. He's a Cy Young candidate and a guy that I don't think anyone should be necessarily too worried about. His last couple starts, not necessarily great. He did finish the year strong, though, and that was encouraging to see against that start against the White Sox. So I don't have really concerns against Darvish himself. I am concerned about Sixto Sanchez, though. An interesting pitcher. He's only had 7 starts this year, but he's got a 3.46 ERA that really just kind of bumped up after 2 most recent starts where he gave up, I think, 4 and 5 runs in each one of those starts against the Nationals back on September 18th, and then he gave up 4 runs against the Braves. He's a very, very intriguing pitcher. He's a guy that can throw 100 miles an hour. He's got a very good slider, not necessarily a curveball, but a very good changeup that he throws with a 2-seam grip. And he throws 2 different fastballs. He'll throw the 4-seam and the 2-seam, but obviously with that 2-seam grip on the changeup, it rotates and has the same type of spin as his 2-seam, but obviously comes in a lot slower, somewhere closer to like 12 to 13 miles per hour slower, which is nuts because his 2-seam fastball can consistently hit somewhere around 96 to nearly 100 miles an hour. Very talented pitcher, a guy that he's, like I said, doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but he doesn't walk a lot of guys either. He's just a very, very talented, and I'm nervous for the Cubs to go up against him. He's not necessarily a guy that the Cubs are, I guess, struggle with necessarily, but he does get the ball on the ground a ton, a 58% ground ball rate. And I'm just nervous. He has kind of reverse splits, weirdly. He does really well against lefties, and watching some of his video, I can see why. He's got a lot more control with the pitches breaking in on the left-handed hitters. So a lot of the sliders, the fastball that'll come in a little bit more. He does kind of throw somewhat of a cutter sometimes with his 4-seam. But the pitches that are coming in on those left-handed hitters, he seems to have better control with, and a good job of really allowing that 2-seam to come out of the zone and back in on the inside corner for left-handed hitters. So they've had a hard time hitting him. Right-handed hitters, though, he has a tough time with that 2-seamer against righties because it tends to leak out over the plate. So it works great against left-handed hitters because that ball will look like it's not going to be in the zone and then tail back in. Or sometimes it'll look like it'd be on the inside part of the zone and tail away from that batter. So they'll either get weak contact on it or they'll miss it altogether. But for a right-handed hitter, when they see that 2-seamer start out and coming in, if they can get on it early enough, they can pull that ball and send it into right field. And you know who's really, really good at that is Chris Bryant and Javier Baez. Now, any other season, you're probably thinking this is a good matchup for them, but right now, that both of them have looked pretty bad. They were really bad the game before. I don't know. I don't know what to expect from this matchup. Obviously, the Cubs have never seen Sixto Sanchez before. He got called up this year. He's the Marlins' top prospect. A talented guy that like we were talking about before the series and the series preview with Ryan, a guy that could end up being probably one of the most talented guys on this Marlins roster. He's probably already their best pitcher. He can just whip the ball just about anywhere in the zone. But I did notice watching some of his tape, he does struggle to hit his spots consistently. He is young. This is a guy we're talking about that's 22 years old. Historically, though, looking through some of his minor league stats, he's not a big strikeout guy. Even now, you think sometimes you see younger guys come up and not quite have the strikeout pitch quite yet. That's never really been his thing. He's always getting the ball on the ground. He's a tough guy to square up. And it's such an interesting approach to see for a starter like this, because you would think triple-digit stuff, pretty good breaking ball, plus-plus changeup, that Pedro Martinez himself has said is already, you know, a very mature pitch for someone his age. You would think this guy's built, though, just mow batters down. And instead, he's locating the bottom half of the zone, getting guys to swing high and through that fastball, and then just fooling them entirely with the changeup or wipeout slider. He's an interesting guy, and I'm worried because his stuff is filthy. The Cubs always seem to struggle against these younger batters that they don't have a ton of tape on. But it looks like some teams have had some success bombarding Sixto early on. I think he's got nearly his first pitch and second pitch swings are, I think, the highest in baseball. Teams are swinging at the first or second pitch nearly 45% of the time right now against him. Makes a lot of sense. I guess if you want to try and pick a pitch, he's probably going to go first pitch fastball. His usage seems to suggest he will go that two-seamer initially to start and then come back to that changeup to try and finish him off for that strikeout or that ground ball. A very effective guy with a lot of nasty stuff, and he's probably going to be the deciding factor for this Cubs team, because we saw in some of his starts this year for Sanchez, he had a game where he struck out the Rays 10 batters, but then came across the Nationals and they tagged him for a couple home runs. We'll have to see. I'm not sure, but the game is going to teeter on whether or not Sanchez can keep these Cubs from really squaring him up. I mean, obviously, that's how every game is decided, but Sanchez alone, because I think you can assume Yu Darvish is going to give you a good outing, especially it being a postseason game. I think he's going to be amped up. Sanchez, being a young guy, 22 years old, only 7 starts under his belt with the Marlins. This could be a time he, you know, maybe struggles a little bit. Maybe the nerves get to him. You have to hope the Cubs' experience wins out in this situation, but it'll be an interesting pitch-up matchup for sure. Starling Marte does sound like he did break his pinky yesterday against Dan Winkler. No word from Don Mattingly on whether or not he's going to be in the lineup or what the contingency plan is if Marte doesn't play. Monte Harris did come in to replace him afterwards. He was coincidentally the Bulls, Shaq Harris's brother, actually, the guard for the Bulls. He's actually brothers with Monte Harris. Very strange but fun fact. Taking a look at this lineup, though, I would assume, obviously, Victor Caratini, I would think this lineup stays roughly about the same, with Caratini and Contreras swapping basically DH and catching spots. But lineup, I think, would stay the same for the most part. Maybe you move Bryant and Rizzo around a little bit, I guess, but I don't think what would change there for the most part. I don't know. Keys to this game, it really comes down to the Cubs. I think, you know, Sixto's not a guy you're going to be able to drive a lot of home runs off of at the moment, even though he's got ton of plus fastball stuff and you can get on a pitch of his early. I think the best approach is to really just take what he has, take what you can from him, try and hit the ball into spots the defense isn't, and not try and do too much with the pitch, because you know, you could easily think you're getting a fastball at 100 miles an hour and you get that changeup at 89. So I think seeing pitches, and, you know, while teams have had some success bombarding pitches, the Cubs don't have a ton of confidence in their offense right now. I think you need to see pitches, figure out who this kid is a little bit, and kind of go from there. He's only been through the lineup for a third time, only, I think, 7 innings, roughly. Through the second time through the lineup, his ERA climbs almost a point and a half. If you get him to throw more pitches and you see him through that lineup again, you start to see how predictable his pitches are, and he's likely going to make a mistake. He misses pitches consistently. So if the Cubs can pick those mistakes and really take advantage of them in moments where they've got runners on base, they should be able to win this game, because Darvish isn't going to give up a ton of runners. He might give up a solo shot here or there, but if you can score 3 or 4 runs early in this game, get Darvish that confidence, the Cubs probably tie this series. So I think that's the approach you have to have. While teams have had success kind of jumping on those pitches early on, I just don't think that's the right approach for this Cubs team. I think they're at their best when they're seeing pitches, working high bet counts, and getting into this Marlins bullpen that has been better but still really suspect. A lot of 35-year-old guys, and Brandon Kinsler, 35-year-old closer, older guys that don't have a huge track record, with a combination of some younger guys who are good, but also, again, small sample size in 2020. So I think that's got to be the approach for the Cubs. I think you got to see some pitches. Hopefully you push Sixto Sanchez out of this game early on. Maybe score a couple runs early in this game and let Darvish kind of push that momentum, put the pressure back on the Marlins. That'd be my approach, but we'll have to see. Sad reality is, you know, while this could be the last playoff run for this Cubs team, it could all end in two games, and that would just suck. So let's hope that doesn't happen. We don't come on this podcast tomorrow and have to not only break down this game two loss, but then kind of do a postmortem on a very strange 2020 season, but also just the optics of losing to the Marlins, the team that got COVID, against the team that didn't have anyone test positive for COVID, the team that hasn't lost a postseason series and last one in the National League Series against the Cubs. Like, there's a lot of things here I don't want to deal with throughout the offseason and have to write as leads for stories or whatnot. So hopefully the Cubs can get this figured out, get into a game three with John Lester on the mound and make things happen from there. But we shall see. But that will do it here for today's episode of Locked On Cubs. We appreciate you guys sticking around. Stick around all season, too. I know it was tough with no baseball for a good portion of the spring and summer, but I appreciate you guys all sticking around here with me. Remember, to get this show every day, you need to subscribe to Locked On Cubs on whatever podcast app you use. Google, Apple, TuneIn app, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure you subscribe. Leave a 5-star review. Then make sure you follow us on Twitter at Locked On Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. But thanks for tuning into your guys' Daily Cubs podcast. Enjoy the rest of your day. And as always, go Cubs.